The holy grail of investing. Are you diversified in a way that protects you from losing money?
Even if I was rich and said, I have $1 million, I'm going to divide it among all these 7 outlets, would I be better off doing that than going into only a handful of things I know? Part of it, buying tech, is you're buying growth, future growth.
If you want to get into this investment, go here, go here, go here. That's what we are going to be talking about today after I just finished Tony Robbins' new book. And I know, Albert, hello, welcome. You are an investing guru, which is why I think
I wouldn't say
you are the guru. You're the guru. We're going to go with that. You are really good at it. You just looked at your portfolio and I think you said you beat the S&P every single year indefinitely except for 1 year. So that's pretty freaking.
According to Fidelity, that's correct. Every single year I have beaten the S&P 500 except for 1 year. There was one really bad year. But the S&P 500 didn't do good either, but I did worse. How about that?
And you've been investing, what time period did you look at? I think it was probably over 10 years, I'm assuming.
Lifetime. So yeah. I got my first job that generated enough cash for me to actually invest anything in 2006. So I've been investing since 2006.
Okay. So all to say, you've had a good performance track record. I also say that I'm pretty good at it. When I look at, I haven't looked at all my different portfolios, but I know that I'd say I'm pretty good at it. But today we're going to talk about the new book that Tony Robbins released, which I think it will also get into a lot of other topics. So the book that I just read of his is called The Holy Grail of Investing. And when you think of Tony Robbins, most people probably think self-help, personal growth, giant hands. He's really tall.
He's a huge human being with like a massive bone structure.
Yeah. Do you know why he's so big, by the way? Side note.
I believe he suffers from a form of gigantism. Isn't that right?
Is that even a Okay, I don't know. Is that even a word? Is that real?
Yeah. Robert Wadlow is the world's biggest man. He was a giant, gigantism.
Okay. Well, I don't know, but he has a tumor in his pineal gland, and it essentially accelerated his growth. I think when he was in like middle school, he grew like a foot in such a short period of time. And he's talked about the experience of needing to go and people recommending getting this tumor out and what it was doing, but he never got it removed. And it essentially was like a growth hormone. And it's where he gets so much of his energy from, was keeping this tumor in there. And he went through a lot of pain as like a kid going through huge growth spurts so quickly, where he's like constantly, his bones were in pain and his body just felt like it was about to break because it was growing so quickly. So that is why he's so large.
But I do know about how he got famous or started to get famous, like because he was a janitor.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So he worked at the same studios as Guthy Renker, which is like the king. They're the kings of like infomercials and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were selling like self-esteem things. And like he was watching it. And so I guess he did a presentation on and tried to sell the thing. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, he's good at this.
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Self-esteem motivation. So yeah, he's janitor work at Guthy Renker helped him get known.
Yep. Yeah. So he has a very cool backstory of what it takes as a teenager to like get his foot in the door. And he does kind of detail of like, if you want to, you know, be the best at something, you need to surround yourself with that. You go and you be, you know, whatever you need to be in that space with someone to be able to learn from them. If you want to learn about investing, then you go and you be the janitor to be around that person, or whatever you need to do to have, you know, the average of the five people around you being the greatest. So I have a lot of deep respect for him. I think he is changing the world in so many different ways. And his book, his first finance book he ever released was called Money. And it was probably one of the most influential books I read when it comes to finances, because he essentially has a crazy network. You know, he is able to get in touch with the top investors all over the world, the ones who have the best returns. And his first book was kind of what, you know, gave me just insights into like, what are these big investors doing and how do they think about investing? So that's why I even know about his second book that just came out. The first one, the summary, was all about invest in low-fee index funds and diversification. So he had a diversification structure of have this much in stocks, have this much in real estate, have this much in here. And he put exact percentages that was essentially built off of Ray Dalio from Bridgewater. It was built off of his portfolio structure. And I just copied it. I remember reading it being like, this looks good. And I just copied it. And it worked pretty dang well. So he released a new book called The Holy Grail of Investing. And the concept of this book is that the world is very different now, and that how you were investing 10 years ago probably needs to be adjusted, because so many things are now correlated that used to not be correlated. Back in the day, you know, I mean, back in my finance days, you would look at the correlation of things and then you would pick assets that were not as correlated. his thesis is that, you know, right now, if you look at many things, bonds and stocks, they move in very similar ways. And so they're actually not that uncorrelated anymore like they used to be. And so he said many of the portfolios that people are invested in are very, yeah, correlated, and that they're moving in the same direction. So you actually have more risk now because how the market and how bonds and how things are moving together. And so this book is all about how do you get back to a portfolio of 8 to 12 uncorrelated investments, and what does that look like? Which I think is interesting because the first thing I did, I went and looked at my portfolio and I'm like, okay, let me look at, you know, how many of my things are moving in the same direction and what isn't moving in the same direction as that, which I think a lot of my portfolio does look like it's moving in a similar way. I mean, even if you think about crypto, for a while there it was pretty tied to like the stock market did something. Crypto also maybe moved up as well. Something went down, it also moved down. Like it wasn't that uncorrelated like it used to be. So that's why this book is had a lot of interesting points, and he did have very specific recommendations of how to find things that are not correlated to invest in. And I will put the caveat of I think Tony Robbins sold out in this book because he partnered with, which I'm like, I deep respect, but he co-wrote this book with an investment firm. Okay. And this investment firm, there are so many links throughout it that say, if you want to get into this investment portfolio, if you want to get into this fund, go here, go here, go here.
Was it BlackRock?
Nope. It was this company called Kaz Investments. And I'm sure they're great. And I have a couple of friends who are invested with Kaz. But and their methodology is interesting. I mean, the whole fund that you're able to invest in, one, I think is for people who have money. Like you can't not have money. Minimum investment is $25,000. You need to be a self-qualified accredited investor to get into this fund. And the fund has uncorrelated assets in it, which are very different than what I'm probably invested in now. Things like something called GP stakes. Have you heard of this? Where you're like a general partner and you own a stake?
Yes.
By investing in this fund, you get access to that. You get access to pro sports ownership. You get access to venture capital investments, energy, private credit lending, real estate, and then like the secondaries market. So there's this fund that you can get access to, and they definitely flex and like have a bunch of links going to this fund for the first half of the book. So that piece kind of, I was like, I think there's gold in there. And I do think thinking about investing like this is good, but I think they kind of sold out.
Okay. The Holy Grail of Investing.com is the book. In it, it says the readers will learn how the Titans have generated north of 20% compounded annual return for decades, how to take advantage of the high returns in private credit, how investments in private real estate can work as an inflationary hedge. It goes into like private equity, how to be part of pro sports teams, and trillions in the energy revolution. So it's interesting that they're so that broad, because in general, most companies or investment houses, hedge funds, brokerages, whatever you want to call them, people kind of specialize in sectors.
Mm-hmm.
Even the best, they kind of specialize in a sector. And so could this book teach you how to do all seven of these areas really, really well? I mean, possibly. I'm not against it.
I think how I'm using this book is more opening like my mindset to other alternative investments. Do I think it can easily teach someone, especially if they're a novice, how to get into this without using Tony Robbins' investment firm or the person he's partnered with? That part feels like it's still pretty hard. So I think how I'm using is there's all these alternative investments that I probably haven't thought about. Like I have not thought about GP stakes and how that could even work as part of my portfolio. So instead I'm going and exploring that on its own, because I would say most people who go and read this book will be like, it seems like the only option is to go through this like Kaz Investments firm, because that's all the links. And then when you look up these things, it's hard to find. But I do think it's very interesting just to think about how, like what kind of assets you have in your investment portfolio, how they're moving, and are you diversified in a way that, you know, protects you from losing money and not being, you know, betting on too many risky things at once? And how to even like add in cash flow supporting investments into your portfolio that actually provide cash flow. So I think it opened up a lot of, it was like a can of worms that it opened up. Towards the end of the book, he did have a lot of good interviews with, you know, some of the best investors out there. And I think they have some good tips. And, you know, it's like listening to Warren Buffett's The World, where you're like, Yeah, he's pretty smart. Like, I want to hear like an interview with him to see how he's thinking about this right now. So it was good for opening up ideas. But I wanted to hear about how you're thinking about the market right now, because I know we talked about this earlier. You've got, you know, certain investment metrics up on your screen of your computer at all times. And so when you think about like what you're investing in, where are you at?
Well, yeah. So, you know, I don't have insight. I'm not a lawmaker, you know, so I'm not Nancy Pelosi, so I can't guarantee myself to be right. But I tend to believe. So a lot of times, and this is just me being the skeptic, but in my experience, it's hard to sell a book when everyone already knows what you're talking about. And I do subscribe to the Warren Buffett mentality that no one likes to get rich slowly because it's boring. But my friend kind of changed my mindset on this. And he says, on every stock, it doesn't matter. There's a winner and a loser, right? So if you're selling something, it's because you either think it's at its peak value. If you're buying something, you think you're getting a deal. Only one of you is right. So the way my friend who runs his own hedge fund explained it to me is like, even if you only knew one thing, you could be rich to infinity because you would not be wrong. And that's his whole point. It's like the whole point of diversification is that you're not certain. So you want to buy a bucket of assets that gives you the best directional information that you possibly can go. But if you are so certain in one thing and you are so convinced in one thing, you could equally be reached to infinity because you wouldn't be wrong, right? And so if you think to like my buddy Roaring Kitty, a.k.a. Deep F in Value, a.k.a. the guy that figured out the GameStop situation. He made over $34 million, literally like the only stock he's ever held. He's kind of just now rich and doesn't worry about stuff. And so when I think about this stuff is I think to myself, what is more likely to be true? Would I have gateways and access to all these alternative investment vehicles? Could I then bet my dollar? So even if I was rich and said I have $1 million, I'm going to divide it among all these seven outlets. Would I be better off doing that than going into only a handful of things I know? And so when I was in tech and still kind of am, but not as much anymore, I was able to pick a lot of winners. So I was able to pick AWS. I was able to pick Shopify. I was able to pick some of the big winners. And then as, you know, what's funny is like, as I learned more in IT visionaries and stuff, I just started picking losers because I was further away from the inside of the companies that were using the software and products that were now exploding. Mm-hmm. Previously, my investment thesis was almost always based upon my relationships with sales reps and how easy it was for them to sell the product. I could ask a question like, well, what percentage of people are hitting quota? Like 80%. Like, boom, this is a winner. Because it's easy to sell. The demand curve is so high. How easy is it to reorder? Boom. They would tell me how easy was to reorder, how many people were renewing. And so that made it easy to make bets in those software categories. As I got further away and I started hearing what, you know, team members said, like, so when, I mean, I'll say straight up, like, I'm watching Roblox. I'm seeing Roblox happening. I'm talking to Dan Sturman, the CTO of Roblox. Man, I'm thinking like, man, Roblox is a killer. It's a winner. I put my money in Roblox, you know, not reading the fundamentals, because part of it, buying tech, is you're buying growth, future growth.
Yeah.
And I knew that. And so I was like, oh man, this is a winner. This has to be a winner. It's not done nearly as well. You know, if you think about like the Peloton fad, when Peloton was running through the roof, I was skeptical to Peloton because I knew of the fitness industry. I didn't believe that was a tech stock. So I didn't think it should behave like one. I didn't touch it. I didn't short it, but I just didn't understand it. So I stayed away. But as I found myself, as I removed myself and did more interviews versus like the practitioner, where I lost my relationship with people that were selling the products and services and or fulfilling the products and services, I started becoming, I think, less good, but I picked some really good winners over that time period because of that. So like, I actually believe in mastering sector, because if you master a sector, why would you lose?
Yeah. So, I mean, when you think about mastering a sector, though, I'm like, I feel like you have to be so in the weeds. And I also think it's maybe hard to look up and see what's happening in the market, though. I mean, I'm thinking about that. Let's just take these, you know, there's these email automation tools. I was just in one earlier today called Constant Contact. Terrible. Yeah, I'm like, how does anyone use this company? And I was trying, and it's like, it was just terrible. But I'm like, if you're in it and you're like, well, I use it all the time, and like it gets emails out and I get response rates, and you're not really able to like look out there at the Klaviyos, at the you know, like I like that woodpecker tool that we use. If you're not able to look up, I don't know how you would be, make good decisions, because most people aren't just experimenting with the tech and knowing, you know, I mean,
great question. So it was never, I wasn't a master of tech. I was. So like in that example, you are talking about email service providers, but what the real question is what do other people who experience email, like what categories and sectors are use email service providers? So I remember when I was in e-commerce with a company like AdShoppers, I saw Klaviyo win every single account. Like I literally saw every day we talked to a new customer because our tool connected to ESP. We're like, what's the ESP record? Klaviyo. I was like, oh my God, like Klaviyo is constantly winning. So you, when I say you're in the sector, it's typically you are the customer of the thing you will want to possibly understand. That becomes your peers. So like when I was in software, it was easy to know and pick the best. Did I invest in PagerDuty? Yes, because our company leveraged PagerDuty to solve problems. All my team members that had friends that were in software companies, they were buying PagerDuty too. So when I was in tech, we were consumers of tech. So I didn't understand consumer technology. I understood even a smaller sector, enterprise technology, which ended up being the winner. But like, why did we invest a lot of money in AWS, which is up over 400% since I've invested? It was because everyone I knew was building on AWS. No one wanted to build on Azure. Right. But as in the last, when I was at Pureport, I did notice that Azure was starting to be used way more often. Well, because we were a software defined networking tool. I just by default thought it was always going to be AWS Direct Connect gateways. But then we kept meeting customers like, can you connect to Azure? ExpressRoute. So like you could see Azure was selling way more. It was harder to understand Microsoft, though, because Azure and their cloud services was you know, a smaller portion, I guess, is the best way to say of Microsoft's total portfolio of revenue. But Azure kept blowing up. Of course, you guys, everyone can see now that Microsoft is, Satya Nadella has blown Azure to the top. So like it's interesting to see in, you know, counter, like we rarely saw people going to GCP, rarely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not meaning Google's, not, but like they weren't the winner in the, like if I had a better winner in the category. So when I say like you're in the, when you're in the category and understanding it, you're really trying to, when I say in, what does in mean? In means you are talking to the customers of the thing you're trying to evaluate. That to me means you're inside.
Yeah. I feel like there should be some kind of groups around this to be able to help show like, these are the most amazing products right now. And here's what I'm seeing everyone in this space using. I feel like I think from the outside, it'd be pretty hard to try and figure it out unless you're in the space and you're seeing like what you're seeing. So I'm like, I don't know how to identify that, but it would be interesting to try and find a way to and be like, what's happening in the e-commerce space? What's happening in, you know, the warehousing and shipping and logistics space? What are some of the top things that people are gravitating towards because of, you know, the market shifting and they need different automation tools or whatever? But I don't know if that's out there right now. I'm like, how do we plug into this information without having to work in that field? Because I don't want to work in it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't disagree. So then the other thing I've always relied on is talking to and understanding what... So I would say I have good friends that are, say, have good, deep domain expertise in the businesses that they run. So, for example, I know people that are in real estate. I know people that are in hedge funds. I know people that are in small business operations. They tend to have networks of common networks. So like, for example, if my friend who's a general contractor, he's got a lot of general contractor friends. So he understands like general contract. He just knows the business and the industry, right? Mm-hmm. So if it was software, like would he understand like contractor management software tools? He probably does. He also understands project management software. He also has friends that understand these things. Everyone is a customer of something. And then everyone typically has a network of common friends. So like you have people that also are in media, content creators and stuff like that. So understanding what they want and want to purchase and to get access to and what is hard to get access to kind of helps you gain expertise in that domain. And that's kind of how I've always done it. I've stuck really close to like, what is the demand curve of any given product or service inside of a category? Because that'll tell you like, well, because it's hard to change demand. It is. It's really hard to, especially things that are like, they take a lot of time to deliver. Logistics is one of them, right? Like it's really hard to switch logistics or manufacturing suppliers or fulfillment. So That's typically how I've done it, and it's worked for me because I don't want to. Yeah, I can't pretend that I like how to invest in sports. I mean, I'd love to. I literally know nobody in pro sports. Nobody.
Yeah. And that's when I think with a lot of different investment strategies, I still think sometimes it's like knowing the person who can get you into these things or knowing the person with the knowledge who can help guide you, I think is still a relationships thing. And that is when I look at some of these things, like that's what's necessary to get into pro sports or to get into this, you know, this fund that's investing in pro sports, which after I heard the metrics on pro sports, I'm like, if you get in on the right teams with the right media deals and
I don't even think you need to get on the right team. I think you just need to be in the sport. Like,
yeah.
Show me the NFL team losing money. Like, it's not, it doesn't happen.
Well, then there you go. You can just go invest in this fund and you'll get access to some pro sports that they're investing in.
But here's what's interesting. I think it's all around you. It's like, it's literally all around you. I don't think you really need to know that many people because everyone you do know knows something and is a customer of something. And so I'll give you an example. This is what my wife did. So we are a hockey family, and a new rule was passed from USA Hockey that you need neck guards, which is a piece of fabric and Kevlar that goes around your neck. It's to prevent getting killed, basically. 2 years ago, 3 years ago, a kid unfortunately took a skate blade to the neck and he died. And there was an incident in Europe this year where a guy took a skate blade to the neck and he died as well. You know, if you get your throat cut, obviously you don't have very long to live. You can't put a tourniquet on your neck. Like you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
If anyone's morbidly curious, the only way to stop it is to get like an actual clamp and clamp up into the arteries. Yeah. I mean, you're really, at that point, you're really in trouble. Right. So USA Hockey was going to pass a law that says you cannot play without it. So you're talking about, my wife just instantly starts looking up. Well, how many kids play hockey? How many kids are in the United States? How many, you know, that play hockey? And who makes, there's really only two suppliers of hockey gear, CCM, Warrior, and Bauer. And so she's like, well, who are these companies? And because if you can buy stock in them, they're about to have a whole new line of revenue, these neck guards that are going to, they're by default alone, they're going to sell like twice what they sold last year. So like we make hypotheses like that too. Like, you don't have to know too much. You just, regulation is another one, because when the laws get changed, whoever is the supplier, the thing in that law grows to infinity, or not to infinity, but it grows a lot, which is how Nancy Pelosi's husband's so good at trading. Because if you make the law, you know who benefits from the law. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think about that with cannabis companies right now. I mean, it's not federally legal. And so they have hard times getting access to lending because it's not federally legal. It's only legal in certain states. But it will be. I mean, I think it's pretty clear on the trajectory that it will be legal in all 50 states. And so I do think there's opportunities like that of like.
So I did. I bought some Aurora cannabis back when like states were legalizing weed left and right. I mean, it was a dog. Did really bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Not enough got legalized fast enough, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some of those spaces. You definitely need to wait. I wouldn't like sell it. It's not doing well right away. But I think for spaces like that, that's where I think like private money lending, where you get cash flow coming back to you by giving someone a loan and you say every month I'm going to get this much return. And then by the end of it, maybe I get equity in your company. I know my one friend, he's a newer friend. His name's Justin Donald. You would actually probably really like him. He wrote this book called The Lifestyle Investor. And I met him a couple weekends ago, and he was kind of talking to me about how he invests, and he has these money masterminds, but a lot of it is like his principle, don't lose money, and the things he invests in are cash flow. Like he does invest in crypto and longer term things, but a lot of the things he does is, you know, a little bit more alternative in a way that's going to give him cash flow every single month. But he talked about the cannabis industry as one example, and some other psychedelics things that are happening right now. He didn't talk about that, but that's what I'm watching. I'm like, when those laws go through, and insurance is able to accept some of these things, the market in this space is going to radically change, and there will be just probably a couple big winners who benefit from this. And so how can you kind of get in on that early and find the ones that you think, you know, have the biggest moat, whether it's a certain way that they have protected their process, the IP, maybe they've got the structure with the insurance companies already. Like if you like a space, I think that you can watch it, like you said, watch the regulations and then be like, how can I make a bet in here, because I know that I'm betting that when this space opens up, these companies already have the partnerships that are going to propel them forward past everyone else.
So that's That's actually, speaking of your friend Justin, just investing in cash flow, that's how I got into real estate. Because my friend Mike is, he's the OG Section 8 real estate guy that I know. He's been doing it since 2006, maybe earlier. He might have been doing it earlier. So when I met him, it was actually the downturn of the stock. I told you when I was losing my tail. And he told me he averages 30% return. Averages. Like, it's not even like a question. I was like, what do you mean? That's BS. There's no way. And so we broke it down. I was like, oh my God, this is preposterous. I couldn't believe how slow and steady, in specifically his model of Section 8. It's not for everybody, but, you know, buying townhomes, townhouses, how much repairs. And like, he had every detail laid out, like spreadsheets beyond belief. And so after I've known him for a long time, and it was like, there was always like this like undertone growing up, but coming up through the tech sector with him, because he was our HR guy, and we, you know, I had sales guys, but there was something about Mike where I was like, why does Mike have so much money? Like, we know how much he makes. Like, how does Mike have so much freaking money? Like, he always has money. So he taught me his model, and I immediately started applying it, and like, he has it down like clockwork, kind of like what your friend Justin talks about. He's like, wants steady payments every single time. He knows exactly how much he's going to get. You know, he can largely predict his expense ratios. He's like, this is just math. Every year, now he's at the point now where every year I think he adds $12,000 to $15,000 of income. Just like, he just adds it. And then if he gets a property, he's adding another $6,000. So he like on average buys like two properties a year. He's adding like $24,000 a year of income every single year. He's been doing this for more than 10 years.
Wow. Yep. Yeah. So I think that method of finding things like that, that's what I think most people don't think about, because most people think, okay, I've got money, I just need to invest it, stocks, bonds, real estate, like real estate being the highest lift one. I'm like, how do you get into that? There's more upfront costs. There's more things to think about. But I think now it's like a space where you need to look into these different alternative ways to invest, which might mean more upfront time. I know you had a lot of upfront time trying to figure out the Section 8 stuff, but then once you get it, it's going to give you a return in a much lower risk way than people have probably experienced before if they are investing in like much more traditional modalities.
He has an interesting philosophy, like, and I think you'd like this. Like, so the reason, and I think your friend Justin does this too. You like, if you invest in cash flow, you keep increasing the amount of money you can invest. So that's why he's always like, cash flow first, everything else is second. So if he has money, he buys a cash flowing asset. Now he has cash flow to buy another asset and or invest in a sports team. I don't know how to get there, but.
Yep. Yeah. I know that Justin and many of my friends who are in my circle, they all are pretty heavily invested in mobile home parks because of the consistent cash flow. And they own huge amounts of land with mobile homes on them and very low cost and predictable.
I'm on the Crexie Mobile Home Park. I'm on the Crexie Mobile Home Park newsletter. I'm like, dude, this is just such a winner.
A lot of my friends are in on this, and they're like, after I'm hearing how they think about it, how they're investing in these new ones, I'm like, okay, things like this, like if you're around people who can just spark an interesting idea like that, and then you go follow the rabbit hole, I think it can open up cool opportunities. But, you know, you just have to do some exploration, and you have to take full responsibility of your finances and your life and like proactively do it. Because I think most people don't want to do that, which I get it. It is hard. But if you do, I think there's a lot waiting there.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would like, were you attracted? I guess, you know, we're running long, but were you attracted to these alternative investments, or did you find them like not interesting because they're too far or too distant from what you know?
I was attracted to them because I think the GP stakes thing is interesting. Especially he will, and I went and looked into it further, like when you understand the model, because a lot of people have questions of like, why would someone allow me to own a stake in their company, in their fund? And like, once you kind of understand the model and why this is necessary because of the rules of how funds are built, then I'm like, oh, that could be an interesting way to invest in an area that, you know, is just outside of what I've ever done before. And I see the return potential and I see the history there. So I think that one was interesting to me. The pro sports ownership thing, that one feels very hard to get into unless you know someone. And so unless you're just going to invest in this fund, which has that.
The other thing is the people that own pro sports, like, why would they need your money? I don't know.
they do explain why they need that as well. So that I think that the book does have interesting points of like,
cool.
Many people would ask questions like that. Like, why would they ever need my money? Why are they looking for that? Why would someone allow me to own equity or own a stake in their company? So those questions do get answered. So I think that's when, yes, if you have a certain amount of money, this one has to be a minimum of 25K. And you're like, I want to at least put it in this bets knowing that anything invested in this fund is something that I'm probably unable to get access to myself because I don't know someone who can pull me into a fund like this. And I think there are other funds. I need to go and look and see. But I think there are others outside of this one that you can get in on it. But yeah, I do think it's interesting not to put all your money there, but to have some diversification into these investment vehicles is interesting. But then I also think crypto, I'm going to stay bullish on. You know, I've been bullish on that ever since I've been on Mission Daily. I've always been big on, you know, Bitcoin and Ethereum and just kind of watching that space.
To clarify, I am only big on Bitcoin. Bitcoin. I only endorse Bitcoin. And I love it. Love it. The more I learn about it, the more I'm like, oh my God, I need more.
I want to like reverse our conversation in history because I'm like, when I first told you about Bitcoin and about it, I remember you'd be like, no. I remember you were a little more like, Steph, when I brought this up. It was a while ago, though. So,
well, first of all, I had heard about Bitcoin before meeting you.
I know you've heard about it.
I had a Coinbase account already. No, I already had a Coinbase account, but I wasn't long. I was like dabbling, really, really dabbling. But I wasn't super bold. The main reason why I pulled back, so I pulled back my money during the ICO phase. So Bitcoin was trading about $16,000 a coin, and it rolled back quite substantially.
Yeah.
And this was when like Telegram was launching an ICO and all these companies were launching ICOs, but no products. And I was like, why on earth will Bitcoin grow if there's an endless supply of entrants to the market? And it, through my own lack of interest, lack of focus, lack of relationship, whatever, you can blame it all on me. I could not understand the difference between Bitcoin and all the other cryptos. And therefore I bucketed Bitcoin with all the other cryptos. So I was in general quite bearish on Bitcoin and the industry, although I had maintained and held my positions in ETH and Litecoin that I purchased when I opened my Coinbase account while at AdShoppers, because good old Chad Ledford, he basically told me like, hey, this is the way you buy it. Get a Coinbase account. I'm like, okay, I'll get that. But yeah, in general, I was very bearish on the whole industry because of the ICO, the rush of ICOs. And then it took much longer knowing you and other people to be like, okay, there is a difference between Bitcoin and all the other cryptos. So then I was converted again.
Yeah. Hey, I'm here for it. So yeah, I do think having some, you know, investment into that, if you, I mean, like you said, you like Bitcoin. I do too.
Bro,
I do
there's $700 million a day coming into Bitcoin. So I mean, you are now riding the biggest wave on earth if you're in. So you'll be wrong with everybody if you're wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that I also think though, when it comes to any other, I'll just call them blockchain type technologies, if you're in the space and you know it well, I mean, there's some things happening that I think there will be other winners because a lot of the technologies that are being built on these different coins, I mean, they're going to be utilized within very niche spaces. And so I've seen just some cool things that I'm like, if you're in the space and you understand the complexity of file transfers and big files, and all of a sudden there's, you know, you've got this technology over here that allows for it to be way better than you've ever seen. I think there's opportunities if you're in the space and you understand it. And that's like some of the other things that I've invested in when it comes to crypto and like different coins and stuff. It's because I'm like, oh, we're in the video space. And I think that is very cutting edge based off of what they're trying to do here. And there's seems like demand for it. Oh, okay. JP Morgan is like installing this piece of, you know, whatever. Like I'm watching that. That seems interesting. I'm pretty sure all finance companies would want that. So I think there's other opportunities as well, but you have to kind of understand the space and want to look into it and then also know it's risky. I mean, when I first got into Bitcoin, I knew it was very risky. And I also made the assumption that like this might be an investment that I just lose all my money. And so like I think having a little bit of that in there, a little bit of betting, I like to have that. Just a hint. Like what things am I betting on where I could see a really huge outcome and there's not enough, you know, technicals or things for me to look at that help me make sense of this other than, to me, it's like intuition, gut feeling of like, this seems smart and it seems like people want this and I could see how it would solve a problem and things that I'm doing every day. So I'm going to put a little money in it.
Yeah, I think it's weird that people think about looking to history and stuff when it comes to crypto and Bitcoin and because it's got almost none, like you said. Yeah. I do find it funny when, I'm not saying people are wrong, but when they try to apply stock trading metrics on Bitcoin, because I think to myself, well, it's not a stock though. It's not going to perform based upon markets and sectors and things like that. But
that's what they know.
Hey, listen, keep producing the material. I keep consuming it. I'm already convinced. This is my plan until I die. I'm going to acquire cash flowing properties so that I can increase the amount of money I buy Bitcoin with. That's it. I don't have another plan.
I think it's a good plan. I think after reading this book, thinking about things I invest in, thinking about things you invest in, I think that for me, the summary is still have money in the market. I think you should always have it in like low fee index funds. Still, I think that's like having some money in there is probably good. I think having money in crypto, yes. Real estate, for sure. And then figuring out what percent do you want in alternative assets. And if that's just investing in a fund to get you into many of them, great. Or if that's you betting on a certain space and you can get into that, great. The one piece I'm missing is the cash flow piece. And that's what I want to look into more. And maybe I'll eventually bring Justin on the show and we can talk with him about it. Because he has just a cool structure of how he thinks about cash flow investing. And he has very good examples too. But that's the piece I want to explore more and have a future episode on that, you know, how do I get more into this?
Oh, yeah. I'm all about hearing about the cash flow.
We'll get him on.
I can't wait. That's good stuff. But yeah, that's my investment hypothesis now that I'm older. So I feel like I'm in a different place. So
yeah.
Because I already have an egg, it's a lot easier for me to just say, well, I want to protect the egg. So I do protect my egg by investing in more index funds than individual stocks nowadays, although I still bet on companies. I am looking for whoever can verify AI created. I believe that there is a future, and I've heard some people hypothesize that blockchain will be a part of it because it's an immutable ledger ability to say that this is in fact my piece of content or original piece. Mm-hmm. I think there's going to be a need for verification. Now that I've seen Sora and all these other things coming out, I'm like, dude, no one is going to know what's real. Like reality is going to be completely distorted online. Like, I mean, what's going on? So I think some type of way to verify that you created something is going to be necessary. And so whoever wins that space is going to be a huge winner. Because that is something I think everyone's going to want.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if you find someone in that space, let me know. I've seen quite a few people trying to do it, but I don't think I see anyone who's building a moat around their process and what they're doing where people are flooding to sign up for their service. I haven't seen a winner take all yet. And I don't think there will be very soon. I think this is such a rapidly evolving space that it's a very hard problem to solve. And it's like security issues. Every time you solve it and you block the security issues, they build a way around it. And I feel like that's what this space will be.
Shout out IT Visionaries, another Mission podcast. You guys check it out. I'm the host, no big deal. The Fair Isaac Corporation, I was like, what is this? Why is it on my desk? You ever heard of the FICO score?
Yes, I saw you were talking to them yesterday, interviewing them.
It's the company that creates the FICO score. They do over $1.6 billion a year. Insanity, right? The Carfax report. So there is evidence of us standardizing metrics, verification process. Will that happen in AI verification? I'm telling you, if there is, get on the train. Because everyone can look up FICO's stock too, because it's publicly traded. Yeah, they don't have bad years.
They have the moat of all moats.
They have the kings of cash flow.
Look at that 5-year, look at that 5-year trend. It literally just up and to the right. Barely any
damage. You can't stop. If there's more people, there's more need for FICO's.
Yep, yep. And they knew the power of data. Getting as much data they have on people and then getting everyone plugged into it and relying on it, the whole world, not world, America, driven on FICO.
Yeah, secure it and protect it. And they're like, listen, we can predict risk better than... And so I always thought of FICO. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know that there was a company that created this. And so I joked with my guest. And I was like, now I know these underwriters aren't doing shit. They're literally going to their FICO program and plugging you in. Tells them, oh, you can loan Stephanie this much money at this much rate for this property. I'm like, these people have been trying to tell me that they're like, oh, my underwriters. You mean your FICO program? Like, they probably have like some like kid back there typing it in. I don't know.
So you just said that you have gotten yourself in trouble for investing in companies after you interview with them, and you're like, this is great. But are you, it sounds like.
Well, I don't know how much more FICO is going to grow, but.
Yeah.
So I think your money is safe with FICO. I don't see it going anywhere. But check out that stock. I'm like, check out that stock. I'm like, it's pretty preposterous.
See, and I think FICO is a great company for figuring out how to tap into blockchain and not have to constantly have people rerun to check your FICO score and hit it every time. Like, it's right. It should be right there. It's on the blockchain. Just go look when it was pulled a month ago. Right there is verified. You don't need to hit it multiple times to try and find my FICO score.
It adjusts in real time. Yeah. Yeah. Look at its stock since it publicly trades in 87 at $1.39. Currently trading at $1,329.98. Did it blip in 2021? It did blip. So it had the same blip. Well, it makes sense. There's a lot of spending. It went from 500 to 434. So that's 25% rollback. But since it's 25% rollback, it's just straight to the moon.
But why? I don't get why. Why has it grown so much over the past year?
So they explained that they're only known for their FICO score. They have other products that do a lot of predictive analysis. So like they're used for wind farm companies, oil and gas use them, insurance. So it's like one of the big, I didn't know anything, AI modeling companies out there.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, we should flash up the screen. All kinds of rates. But like, yeah, I didn't even know it was a company. I was like, I just thought this was like a universal thing. People just called it a FICO score. I have no clue that it was a company that created. It's like the Carfax report on people.
Yeah. We should have a screen pop up showing this stock because it's just crazy looking from like 1992 all the way to like more recent years. And then like,
I mean, you're actually, like, you got to hit the compare. Like you can compare it, you know, get the compare on it. Who do you want to compare it to?
Yeah, compare it to Bitcoin.
It'll smash Bitcoin, but I don't even know if you can compare that. But like, I'll type in.
What about Google?
FICO in blue, Google in orange. It has outperformed Google. Well, that's the day. Sorry.
Wait, one day I was like, I need more. X. I need more information here.
Oh, dude. We ain't even talking the same game. Holy cow. For those, it's on a percentage scale. For those listening, it's on a percentage scale on the left. And you should get the YouTube video right now and take a look at FICO compared to one of the FANGs, literally the G and FANG. FANG ain't even blipping.
Do 5 year instead of max or 1 year.
In what realm do you think Google is winning?
Well, I don't think it's winning, but when it's that zoomed out, it's really like this to me shows more than like since 1990.
Well, in the past 5 years, Goog is up what, like 100-something%, and FICO's up over 400%.
Yep. That's wild. All right. Well, I don't know if that means FICO's at the top of its game and be a bad investment, though. So,
well, that's a, well, I mean, what's the top?
Like, look at that. Like, it'd be hard to invest there. I don't know. Yeah. But,
well, that's, so I did ask him on the show. Shout out to IT Visionaries. I don't know if you guys know that. I host that show for Mission.org. What's up? So I did ask him, like, well, who competes with you? And he did say there's a lot of competitors in the AI modeling space. But the one thing he didn't really address is who is creating a credit score of this, like, volume and scale. So if you think about, like, you talked about, Steph, defensible modes, like... You would have to have so much data on people's payment histories, industries, default, like spend.
Yeah.
To just match them. Like, how do you even match them? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And how do you get the partnerships that they have? Like, where people just rely on them. Their systems are built around.
Correct. He talked about their APIs and how they're integrated. So I didn't even know this, but like, when you apply for a credit. So like, this is so clearly obvious when you talk to him, but now that I'm talking to you, it's like, duh, like, what, like, why didn't we think of that? But when you apply for a credit card, you know how a credit card company can approve you for a credit card, like, instantly now? It's because it's API'd into the FICO system. the API into the FICO system, then pull your data, your financials, like your spending history and all this other stuff, and they could approve you for a loan right then and there. Basically, they know your credit risk profiles, everything. So it's just instant. And so it's like, I don't know why I thought my bank was doing it. My bank's not doing anything.
Your helpful thoughts.
We got off topic, but, you know, I feel like it's okay. We were plugging another mission show, so that's fine.
A little off topic, and I think it's super interesting. I think there is a lot of opportunities like that on companies you would never think about that are driving, like, the entire economy. So with that, got some homework to do. We got some people to bring on the show in the future, and, yeah, we hope you all like this episode.
Yes.
Detailing our finance strategies.
There are markets everywhere. You don't have to know all of them, but you do have to know something. And that's the, I think that's my investment hypothesis, is like, if you can get insider information, or not insider, but if you can understand like a market.
Insider.
Well, I'm not, I want to get insider information. I want to be in.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, be like Miss Pelosi's aide or something. You know, what law are you passing? What's your husband trading? Totally cool for us to do this.
Yeah, but if you have personal connections or ways to understand the space, then yeah, the best way to invest is probably knowing or using or watching people buy it or seeing demand or surrounding yourself with smart people that you can just tag along. Yeah.
Tag along. Until next time, everybody.